Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and obviously you've been hearing about the death of North Korean dictator Kim Jong-il this morning. Joining me now to talk about what happens next is Charles Armstrong, the director of the Center for Korean Research at Columbia School of International and Public Affairs. One of very few Americans who's actually been in North Korea. Welcome back to WNYC, Charles.
Nice to be here.
Kim Jong-il was undoubtedly a dictator, blamed for widespread starvation, global isolation, and yet we hear reports and see videos of North Korean people distraught, weeping in the streets. How do you explain it?
Well, this is the only leadership these people have ever known. For 60 years, they've been under the rule of the Kim family. And when this kind of certainty disappears, there is going to be a very deep sense of sorrow. I mean, people came out in droves when Stalin died in 1953 in the Soviet Union, and he was certainly no nice leader. So I think there is a genuine sense of grief, but even more than that, a sense of uncertainty and an idea of the North Koreans don't know where the country is going to go next.
What kind of conditions does he leave his people in?
North Korea is a little bit better off than it was when he came to power. In the mid-1990s, North Korea was on the verge of a disastrous famine, which killed probably more than a million of its people out of a population of 23 million. The food situation is still grim, but it's better than it was then. North Korea is still relatively isolated. It's had an ongoing confrontation with the U.S., the U.N., and other members of the international community over its nuclear weapons program. And their attempts for economic reform have pretty much been stalled, so North Korea is not in good shape.
Any Koreans listening right now and want to call in with your thoughts on Kim Jong-il's death? 212-433-WNYC. Did he loom large to you? I don't expect to get any calls from North Koreans, and there hasn't been much emigration allowed from there to the United States or anywhere else. But South Koreans, do you want to say anything about Kim Jong-il? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show for Charles Armstrong, Korea expert at Columbia University. And can you talk about it in any personal sense or sense of, you know, peoplehood at all? You're Korean American. You have ties to South Korea. What do you think the reaction is like over there?
Well, in South Korea, there's a lot of trepidation about what will happen next. They've had this ongoing confrontation with North Korea for decades. They came very close to open warfare at the end of 2010 when North Korea shelled a South Korean island, as we know. And South Koreans are rightfully concerned that we could face instability and uncertainty in the next little while, which could lead to a real disaster on the Korean Peninsula. There's certainly no love lost in South Korea for the North Korean leadership, but North Korea is a known quantity for South Korea for a couple of generations. And there is also hope, I think, that maybe this will lead to a positive change in North Korea, an improvement of the human rights situation, and maybe even unification.
I also heard the converse fear, which is that the new leader, presuming, and we'll talk about Kim Jong-il's son, Kim Jong-un, who's only presumably in his late 20s. I don't think his exact age is known outside of their own circles, but that he might come in and want to make a statement about his strength and therefore launch some limited military attack somewhere in the region, do something to saber-rattle, do something that might endanger South Korea in some way, at least at the start. Do you think that's plausible?
I think North Korea feels very vulnerable right now. They feel that they may be themselves a victim of targeting by the outside world. They live in a very paranoid environment, it has to be said. There are rumors that Kim Jong-un was behind the shelling that I just referred to, although that's not been confirmed. And he has to show himself, being so young and untested, as a tough leader. So there may be some cause for concern on that score, but we really don't know anything about Kim Jong-un, including, as you say, exactly how old he is. So it remains to be seen what kind of leader he will be.
Help us with the pronunciation of his name, Kim Jong-un.
Kim Jong-un.
and he is unknown, even his exact age, unavailable for comment, maybe at his age unqualified, and some people say he's even uneducated, as he never got past middle school, but I don't know how much to believe of any of it. What do you know?
Well, I don't know any more than that. It's not even entirely clear that he is the same person who was educated at a boarding school in Switzerland in his teens. And it's not clear if he was that person, how far he got in his education. He was pretty obscure. He's the youngest son of Kim Jong-il. Apparently, Kim Jong-il, like his own father, at first looked at his eldest son as successor, but he got into a bit of trouble, Kim Jong-il's eldest son, Kim Jong-nam, trying to sneak into Japan to take his son to Tokyo Disneyland about 10 years ago, and has been living in exile in Macau ever since. No one knows much of anything about the second son, who was apparently passed over. And this whole process of succession didn't really take off until after Kim Jong-il's stroke in 2008, when the leadership woke up to the fact that this guy is not going to live forever and possibly not much longer, and they need to have a succession plan in place, and Kim Jong-un was picked.
What was that Disneyland incident?
Kim Jong-nam, I think it was in 2001, tried to go to Tokyo Disneyland with his son, who was about four at the time, Kim Jong-il's grandson, on a fake Dominican passport, and was caught at the airport in Tokyo and got into quite a bit of embarrassment. And basically, that was the end of any possibility that he would succeed as leader. As I said, he's been apparently living in a rather comfortable exile in Macau ever since.
Was there some other agenda that he had in that incident, or was it such a closed society that literally going to Disneyland was a big offense?
Well, creating an international embarrassment for Kim Jong-il is a great offense. I don't know if there was another agenda. There might have been for him going to Japan. But the fact that he got caught, and this was international news, made things very awkward for Kim Jong-il.
What about the internal weakness of Kim Jong-un? If he is that young, if he's that experienced, might there be other factions of the government that would try to seize power from him or just exert a lot of influence for whatever their interests are?
It doesn't look like Kim Jong-un will actually be the one calling the shots in the immediate future. Most analysts think that his uncle-in-law, Kim Jong-il's brother-in-law, Chang Song-taek, is the real power behind the scenes and will be the regent behind Kim Jong-un as Kim Jong-un comes into age as the leader.
And what do we know about him?
Chang Song-taek is rumored to be pretty hardline. His wife is Kim Jong-il's younger sister. He's worked his way up to the party, especially in security matters. It doesn't seem that he's going to take North Korea into any kind of reform and opening anytime soon, but will pretty much keep the system as it is. And his biggest asset is his unwavering loyalty to the Kim family. And so we can see business as usual for the next little while.
How likely is it that the transition will be challenged, though, by the military leadership?
We don't know. There are no strong indications that there are open dissenters within the military. There are rumors that there are different factions of the military supporting different members of the inner circle. And there are also said to be pro-Chinese elements of the military who are very much opposed to North Korea's recent overtures to the United States and want to pull North Korea closer to China. We may be seeing power struggles within the military itself, between the military and the civilian leadership, but we don't know. We really don't know enough about the inner workings of the North Korean leadership to determine what will happen next.
Part of Kim Jong-il's legacy is he turned them into a nuclear power. Does anyone know how much authority Kim Jong-un will actually have in terms of controlling nuclear weapons and commanding the military?
Kim Jong-il has very much been in charge of the country, and he's the ultimate authority over everything that the country does, including its nuclear arsenal or nuclear weapons. We don't know how many they have. If Kim Jong-un is not the real power on the throne, which seems likely, then those who are surrounding him who actually wield power will be the ones to control North Korea's nuclear weapons. If there is serious power struggle within the leadership, then, and particularly if there's instability in North Korea, then the question of who controls those nuclear weapons is a very serious one and potentially very dangerous.
How in the dark are we? Only a few journalists have been allowed into the country to report on the situation. There's nothing even close to a free press in North Korea. We don't even know how old Kim Jong-il or Kim Jong-un are. Is the administration operating with a major intelligence deficit?
Well, former ambassador to Seoul, Don Gregg, once said that North Korea is the biggest intelligence failure in the history of the United States. I don't know if I would quite agree with that, but there's certainly a great deal we don't know about North Korea. We don't know a lot about who does what within the leadership. And North Korean people are definitely cut off from most information from the outside world, but that's changing. I was in North Korea this past summer. I was amazed at the number of cell phones I saw. There's said to be over 600,000 cell phones in North Korea. You can tune in to foreign broadcasts now. It's illegal, but it's not a crime punished as readily as it used to be. So there is connection to the outside world at the level of ordinary people that just didn't exist 10 years ago, and that could be another factor leading to change there.
The Arab Spring has unexpectedly become the Russian Spring, even the Chinese Spring a little bit with that incident last week that you probably heard about. Any chance with this sweeping the globe and now some cell phones and other technology that might connect them to the outside world in North Korea, that that movement could spread there at this moment of transition?
It doesn't look like it right now, but who predicted the Arab Spring a year ago? If there's one regime in the Middle East that bears some comparison to North Korea, it would probably be Syria. They have a very similar kind of family dynastic leadership, very tight control politically. And the events in Syria are in some ways hopeful for the North, but also troubling because we don't know what the endgame will be there. So it's certainly conceivable that something like that could happen in the North. I think that the best advice is just to be prepared for the unexpected.
China has been North Korea's protector in a way. What do you think China is thinking right now?
China has placed its bets on continuity in North Korea and has given enormous amounts of resources to that regime to keep it in power, to keep Kim Jong-il in power. I wouldn't say they're exactly happy with the direction North Korea has gone, but they don't want anything unexpected to happen. They don't want any instability, and they're watching very closely. They certainly don't want the regime to collapse and to be absorbed by the North, and of course they don't want any kind of military conflict to take place. So they're hoping that they can do whatever it takes to keep the situation under control and stable.
We have 2 minutes left with Charles Armstrong, North Korea expert from Columbia University. The death of Kim, as I'm hearing it, is a little bit mysterious, isn't it? On a train, while on a mission, serving his country. They said that he died from the exhaustion of trying to serve his country. Of course, Newt Gingrich said recently that he had extramarital affairs that were born of his passion for America, but that's another story, but died of the exhaustion from trying to serve his country on a train in the middle of a mission, you know. And I heard some speculation on the BBC this morning that perhaps, just perhaps, no evidence, someone from the military could have done him in. You think that's plausible?
It's possible. I don't see what the motivation for that would be unless there's someone in the military who feels they can control Kim Jong-un. Kim Jong-il's death was not exactly unexpected. Its timing was, but he was not in good health. He had a stroke in 2008, and he had not been in good health for a long time. So it was inevitable that his death would come about sooner rather than later. Whether he died working and serving the country, that I don't know. What exactly he was doing at that time, we can't be certain. There was apparently a mysterious explosion at a train station a few years ago that he that blew up shortly after he had passed by, and there's speculation that that was an assassination attempt. Anything is possible, but then we just don't know. That's the best you can say about North Korea.
Charles Armstrong, director of the Center for Korean Research at Columbia University School of International and Public Affairs, giving us a lot of information, but also concluding, as so often with North Korea, there is just so much that we can't know. Thank you so much, Charles.
You're welcome.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.